Aloha, welcome to The Conversation. I'm D.W. Gibson, in for Catherine Cruz. Today we're talking all things golf. We take a look at the history of the game in Hawaii and peer into the future of the sport. What does golf look like in a world with less access to water? How can the game evolve to be more sustainable in a changing environment? And how can it be more inclusive for a range of players? We have an expert in studio this morning to help us answer these questions and more, and we hope to hear from you too. Do you have opinions about the game of golf? Questions about its future in Hawaii? We want to hear from you. The number to reach us is 808-941-3689. Thanks for tuning in to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm D.W. Gibson, in for Catherine Cruz. Today's show is all about golf, the history of the game in Hawaii, its future in the state, and the bigger question of sustainability of the game beyond the islands. And here to help us work through these issues is Mark Rolfing, former professional player and longtime television golf commentator. 41 years, I hear.
I'm getting ready to start 41. I haven't made it to January 1st yet, but almost.
All righty. Well, and this is a live call-in show. We want to hear from all of you as well. Do you have questions about golf, questions about how it can change to adapt to the future, how you feel about the game? Give us a call, 808-941-3689. Mark, I think in order to get into a conversation about what we want to see from golf moving forward, we need to backtrack a little bit and look at the history of the game. Tournament play has been here in the islands for quite some time. Take us through the history a little bit. When did tournament play first come to the Hawaiian Islands?
Well, it first came, DW, back in 1965 to Wailea Country Club, and it was known at that time as the Hawaiian Open. It was a PGA Tour event, a big PGA Tour event. And it was played the first or second week in February. And all the best players played out here. Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Arnold Palmer was a regular. And it just sort of grew. And I came to Hawaii in the mid-70s and kind of saw what the Hawaiian Open had done for Wailea Country Club. It was the most popular course in all of Hawaii, even though it was a private club. People couldn't play it. But it was very, very popular. And I thought, well, why not try something like that on the island of Maui, let's say. And to make a long story short, we did. We started the second tournament out here in 1982, and that sort of led to a big proliferation of golf events. And by the end of, I was going to say, by the end of the late 80s, early 90s, we were up to as many as 11 or 12 live televised golf tournaments from here in Hawaii. So it became very popular real quick.
Yeah, that's a tremendous growth of the sport as a profession in the islands. Was it a hard sell at first? I mean, obviously, Hawaii has its own attractions, but just sort of business-wise, structure of the tournament, was it a hard sell getting those big players out here? Or was it easy?
It was. It was a hard sell just trying to figure out how to make the tournaments work financially. So if you think about, let's say, the most popular sport, which is the National Football League, and the Super Bowl, you would think, is the most difficult sport to televise. It's got to be. It's the Super Bowl. But if you think of the Super Bowl is two teams, one ball, one score. The Hawaiian Open was 144 players, 144 balls, 144 scores, all at the same time on a playing field that wasn't 100 yards long. It was, in some cases, 300 acres big. No timeouts, you know, no half times. No, it was just way, way, way more difficult. So the sort of possibility of staging a major golf championship for a tiny remote, you know, island chain in the middle of the Pacific Ocean was difficult at best. But to have one or two was incredible. And then to have 11 just shows me, you know, kind of how the certainty of how important golf would ultimately be to Hawaii rested with everybody here in Hawaii, and it became, you know, a pretty big success right away.
All right, so at the top of the mountain there, we have you know, 11 or 12 tournaments here in Hawaii, but that has shrunk considerably, right? So we've gone down to, well, three, as it were, but one imperiled right here. And you mentioned Maui earlier. Kapalua is the course that has had issues of late in terms of access to water, and the tournament there, the Century, was recently canceled. And this is the tournament that you were involved with from the beginning.
I've been involved since day one. And as a matter of fact, I do a lot of consulting work and basically guide Century as a company. Even though they're from Wisconsin, I pretty much do all of their work in terms of guiding them in the direction that I think that they need to go in. They actually have an agreement to televise a tournament here in Hawaii through 2035. So what is happening is effectively not legal. They have an obligation to have a tournament for them, and they're paying for it right now. So something has to give here. Obviously, you know, the water issue is a gigantic issue. It's the worst drought we've had on Maui since I've lived there, almost 50 years now, and longer than that, I think. It's not really as big of an issue from a water standpoint as it is from a water delivery standpoint. So I do believe there is a solution to the problem. It's just getting everybody together in the right room and getting rid of these lawsuits and litigation and start talking to each other and solve the problem.
So the Century on Maui is imperiled. It's certainly not happening in 2026. 2027 remains to be seen. But this issue can, you know, redound to other tournaments. I spoke with Wesley Waialehua, the executive director of Aloha section of the PGA, about the history and importance of tournament play here in Hawaii. And here's what he had to say.
I think with history, many of us are aware with the Grand Slam and how much of a marquee event that was for the PGA of America operating that event out here in the islands at Poipu for many years. And when that exited the islands, I think there was concern for some of the other events and how they would be contested in the state and whether or not that would be an issue. I think as the events have grown over the years, specifically around Mitsubishi and Sony, and speaking to their operators, I mean, the cost of operating these events has gone significantly up. I think a lot of local companies that were very passionate about supporting in that space has changed direction, or their leadership has, you know, retired and matured out. And I think the new directions and new ownerships, or at least companies that have sold, have really changed their priorities in supporting a lot of these local events.
So we have a caller I wanted to get to, but before we do, Mark, you have a thought that timeline for those other tournaments might be shorter than Wesley does.
I think it could be next week or the week after. It's a very, very short time frame, I can tell you, because the tournaments are coming up in Hawaii now, Mitsubishi and Sony. And when you lose one of the three tournaments and you don't have that event to amortize the cost of the TV equipment, automatically it's going to cost more. And nobody has figured out yet who's going to pay that extra money for tournaments that are happening here in a month.
Yeah. All right. So we have Wayne on the line. And Wayne, I think, is going to start off a conversation about how to make some changes to the game. But Wayne, tell us your thoughts. What are you calling it about today?
The kids today have, you know, a quick mentality of video games and everything's immediate satisfaction. And I just thought if you break the game up instead of 9 holes and 18 holes, if you break it up into 6 hole pieces, 6, 12, 18, it would have a wider audience for playing. Maybe you got an hour and a half, you can get 6 holes in. Maybe 9's not enough, you want to get a few more in, you get 12 holes in, and then, or you can play 18. So that's just something to think about for future golf, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Wayne. Really appreciate that. Lots of things to consider in terms of how the game might shift in the future moving forward. Thoughts on that initial salve there, Mark?
I want Wayne's phone number because he's absolutely right. And we're starting to see it more and more now. You're seeing a lot of 10, 11, 12-hole short courses. An hour and a half is actually a sweet spot in terms of the amount of time. You know, I see a lot of people at lunchtime have just about that much time. So what do? They go over to Alawai and hit balls at the range now that it's open again. The best scenario that I have seen yet, and the best idea, is creating a golf course that has 3-hole loops in it. So if you have 6 3-hole loops, you can play them in different orders. You can play them in different amounts. You can play 3 holes, 6 holes, 9 holes, and you pay by the hole. If you think about it, you pay for the amount of time you do almost any activity in this world, whether it's a movie or a restaurant or whatever. Just charge them for the amount of time that they're playing. That's what they do at Topgolf.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA, celebrating over 87 years of dedication in supporting the health and well-being of the people of Hawaii with a commitment to caring for the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
Shenzhen is a sprawling city in China, home to more than 17 million people. Just half a century ago, though, it was completely different.
At the very beginning, it's a very small village, actually. There's not a lot of people living here.
We look at how Shenzhen grew so quickly and whether that growth is sustainable. Next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership. You're tuned to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm D.W. Gibson. Thanks for joining us. Today we're talking all about golf, its dynamic past, its imperiled future, what changes can be made to make the game more sustainable in the islands and beyond. Do you have thoughts? Give us a call. 808-941-3689. Our guest in studio is the esteemed Mark Rolfing, former professional player and longtime television commentator. Mark, we have a caller on the line. We have the attorney for Earth Justice. They've been following the situation at the Century quite closely, and we'll hear from them now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, this is Drew Hara from Earth Justice.
Hi, thanks, Drew.
Thanks for taking me. Yeah, I heard at the top of the program, Mark mentioned that some of the conflicts with the Century is more of a water delivery issue than it is a water issue, and I just wanted to give some context on that. I think while water delivery certainly is part of that specific litigation that's happening, we're definitely having a water issue in West Maui, and that's clear from the fact that it's been designated as a water management area, which is sort of the state's way of acknowledging that water is at critical levels and that this is an ongoing crisis that really predates the current drought as well. I was listening in the beginning, and I know we have this storied history of golf going back to 1965, but the plantations have been diverting water in West Maui for over a century. And so the water issue and the practices and the needs for water that we have in Maui really go back much further than any history that we have of golf in the state or in that area. And the other thing that I would just want to point out as well, while I really appreciate the discussion that we're having and any thoughts of sort of moving forward sustainably and finding solutions together for finding water sources for golf, I think the first step really just has to be that the state needs to enforce the laws that are currently on the books. And just want to make it really clear that since August, the Kapalua golf courses have been substituting groundwater to irrigate their courses. And that is something that's currently illegal under state law. And so it's all good to have stakeholders come together and talk about solutions, but if we're not going to enforce sort of the solutions and the regulations that we already have, we're really starting from the wrong position altogether. And that's what I wanted to share.
Appreciate that, Drew. Yeah, really, really good input there. And you highlight that there are multiple things happening, right? So there's an infrastructure issue, but there's also a water resource issue that goes back generations and generations. Mark, I think that something that I can hear echoed in our sort of pre-show conversation and something Drew said there is that you both think that the state has a role to play here in terms of the future of golf in Hawaii. And Drew nodded at that as well. But maybe respond to Drew's comments there and talk about how you see the state being a player in golf moving forward.
Well, first of all, yes, it's very nice to meet you, Drew. I've heard a lot about you, and thank you for coming on. I'm actually stopping at the governor's office here in an hour and 5 minutes. So at 12:30, I'm going to be at the governor's office today, and we're going to be discussing this very issue, among other things. I do want you to know something, Drew. I am an absolute minimalist. I'm as big a minimalist as you will ever find. The golf course that I built right after the plantation course, which was 1987, we built a golf course in Nebraska, in the sand hills of Nebraska. And it was very much a minimalist golf course. It cost us less than $1 million to build the entire course. Those numbers are now, $1 million a hole to build a golf course. And it's now in the top 10 in the entire world of golf courses. So it can be done. And I think the whole thing is that we need the group of people that are the stakeholders to get together in a room and talk through, you know, all the benefits, all the logistics, all the detriments, and figure out some solutions. I just feel like the government and the state in particular can be a facilitator here, because I have talked to Mr. Yanai at great length about this. I have talked with Race Randall at great length about this. And I think that we need a facilitator, and I think that can be done.
Someone to bring everybody to the table to get them on the same page and help find solutions, right? Because so far what we've seen on Maui is a lot of infighting, a lot of finger pointing, and you're talking about almost sort of mediation, getting everyone on the same page.
Well, you also need you need more than just mediation. You actually need resources, mm-hmm. which Mr. Yanai, particularly at TY Corporation, has lots of resources.
The owner of the course. Land. The owner of the course where the century
the
is
The owner
held.
Of
yeah.
the course, correct. And you need land, which Maui Land and Pine does have. This can all be done. Had it not been something that's been ongoing for years and years and years, I think it would almost be a little bit easier. But it has been so long, and I totally respect what the needs of the farmers are and the needs of the people that for hundreds and hundreds of years have lived off the land there on Maui. And I want us to solve this problem, because if we don't, there aren't going to be any golf tournaments out here, and in fact, there probably won't be any golf courses.
Yeah. And a major part of the state's economy, as we've talked about many times before. We have one caller on the line, Chris, longtime resident from Honolulu, who has a particular take on the game. Chris, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
So I've been in Honolulu since the 70s, raised in the state. I'm ex-military. Just to tell you up front, I am not a fan of the sport golf, and I really feel the strife that the local people have for water in general. I just wish, and I'm just saying this from my own point of view, that we would use the golf resources or the land for other things. And it's just a challenge on hydrating or watering those locations. And like, I'm ex-military, so I don't understand why the military has so many golf courses. And I'm not saying you guys are military, and I'm not saying you represent them, but there's so much of a need in our state for land, resources, and water. And I'm just on the side of, we don't need to have a lot of golf courses in the state in general. So I don't know. That's what I want to start with.
Thanks for that, Chris. Yeah, and certainly, sentiment we've heard from, we did a show on squarely on water resources a couple of weeks ago, and this is something we were hearing from other folks as well. Hesitancy to put resources into this when we know that people are being asked to hold back on the water they use in their private homes and so forth. Mark, I feel like one of the sort of part of the solution here could be how we think about the game of golf in our own imagination, right? Even sort of the picture it conjures up for many of us. And you and I have been talking about changes that the game of golf could make to to require less land, right? To require less water. You even were talking about a couple of courses here in the islands with very different acreages. You gave me a couple of good examples there in terms of the course at Kapalua and a course here on Oahu. Different acreages, right?
Well, yeah, the home of the Sony Open, Wailea Country Club, where we started here in 1965, is only just barely over 120 acres. Whereas the total acreage of the plantation course, the home of the century on Maui, is over 356 acres, so it's more than triple the size. Look, if you take a look at golf and the needs of golf in order to be able to play the game for the average player so that they can enjoy it and have fun, there's a lot of things that can be done. For example, this table that we're sitting at right now, listen to this, it's as hard as a rock. That is not the style of golf course that the plantation course was before we turned the water off a few months ago there. It was very soft, very green, very lush. That's not the way golf courses typically are in Scotland or Ireland, places like that. It's not where they started the game back in the 1400s, and that's not how it was played. I truly believe that we can adapt. We can adapt in the way that we treat the water and the way we deal with the water for the people that use it for agriculture and other reasons. And I think we can adapt the way we use it for the recreational folks that use it, not just for golf, but for a lot of other recreational uses also. So we have to get everybody together again and sit down and talk about it. Desalinization is on the horizon somewhere. There's no doubt about it. But I think making sure that we take a look at what is the best thing for the game in terms of making the game sustainable as a sport itself, as a recreation, and at the same time making it sustainable for people that use the land for their living or other purposes. I think it all can be done. It's just a matter of everybody working together. I think there's plenty of land here.
Well, and this point you made, I want to dial down on a little bit more, you know, in terms of your example of this hard table we're sitting at and sort of the surfaces that people play golf on, because you're making, it sounds to me, you're making the argument that we can create different courses that require less water, that are perhaps more brown, that have those surfaces that are harder where the ball travels differently, right? So we're sort of changing the game not only in terms of the water required by courses, but also the nature of the game, perhaps how quickly it can be played. If you're playing on a faster surface, game's going to scoot along more quickly.
Well, not only will it play faster, so it'll take less time, but that'll ultimately cause it to cost less to the consumer. You won't have to spend as much money to prepare these golf courses. So I think there are different ways to look at it. I think 50 years from now, the game will change. There's no question about it. There are things that have to be done to make the game still competitive. And you can reduce the flight of a golf ball. You can make it go shorter distances, which has really gotten out of control at the highest level these days. These guys, these long hitters are hitting it so far now that it's totally changed. A 7,000-yard golf course is no longer sustainable for the best players in the world. 8,000 maybe now. It could be 9,000 in another decade. That's all getting to be too much. We are going to run out of land for something like that. And so getting everybody together again, and I think having the participants understand what causes golf to be expensive or to take too long or to be too hard for the average player. We can actually make it easier by making these golf courses play shorter.
Yeah, and I'm seeing some connective tissue there between our first caller talking about, hey, why not create like 6-hole games? Your discussion here about perhaps shrinking courses a little bit and perhaps rethinking about courses so they can be drier, can be browner. All of those points to me help sound like they help address the issue of access to land and access to water. If not solve it entirely, at least help reduce the struggle with that issue there. We have another caller on the line, Ben, who, in contrast to our other caller, is a huge fan of golf. Ben, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you very much, and aloha. And Mark, I'm a huge fan and couldn't pass up this opportunity to call in and talk with you. Yeah, I was a greenskeeper at Kapalua, and I'll probably say a few things, and I apologize if they're out of order, or maybe you could ask me to make more sense of them. But, you know, greenskeepers only make $16 an hour starting out, and I think the round of a cost of golf at Kapalua is something like above $300. Even for locals. And then I know I also played at Olawai for quite some time, and that was a $10 round, so I was thrilled with that model. I know that Kapalua has a very wet climate, and I'm just a little dismayed that the tournament, you know, pulled out this year. And I was wondering if Mark could speak about the PGA Tour's tendency, you know, maybe against the USGA's movement towards drier conditions, to televise a course that is not as crisp and green and lush, but also, on the other hand, a crisp Kapalua would be a very more difficult golf course with the runoffs and everything.
Okay, Ben. Some great comments there. First of all, congratulations on your stint at Kapalua. My first job was working in the golf cart staging area there, so I know it well. I did that before I became the assistant pro. In the year 2000, we had the first event of the century. And I don't mean S-E-N-T-R-Y, century. I mean century. So the first event for the next 100 years was held at Kapalua. Tiger Woods and Ernie Els played in a sudden-death playoff, and the golf course was brown. It was a really, really dry year, and the golf course was not in great shape. It was brown, and it was fantastic. It was the best finish in the history of the PGA Tour. Ernie Els came to the last hole, tied for the lead, and made an eagle and lost.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. So it just shows you that conditions can change. Look, first of all, I want to talk about greenskeepers real quick. They're the most undervalued people in the entire game. By far, it's not even close. They don't make nearly enough, and it's totally out of whack, the amount of money that television announcers make. That was the nature of big-time TV when I started back in the 1980s. You know, things are changing a little bit now, but look, the game needs to be sustainable. And what we have right now is a game that is not sustainable. It's not sustainable at the highest level. We're already seeing the PGA Tour starting to shrink. We're seeing other live golf organizations that are coming up and kind of stealing some of the players and things like that. And it's becoming an awkward situation for all the best players. And you got to remember that golf is about only 4% of the people in America play golf. It's a very small number compared to the NFL. I mean, 50 million people watch that football game on Thanksgiving Day. It's not like that in golf. So we have to keep the model working and working nicely. And if it's not working for a certain group of the people, then it's not working for everybody. So we got to make it work. And I believe what Ben says, and I think he's got some good points. There's some points I would probably argue a little bit, but I think for the most part, we want to hear from people like Ben on a regular basis. Only when the participants and the people that are involved, only when they understand really what's going on, will be able to solve what the problems are right now.
Speaking with Mark Rolfing about the game of golf, do you have questions for us, thoughts for Mark? Call us at 808-941-3689. That's a great example, historic example you give there, Mark, about the previous tournament played on the course when it was brown, essentially, up at the Century. And I wonder, you know, that speaks to the point that sort of has been latent heretofore, that a lot of this redounds to the course owners and sort of the kind of course they want, right? I mean, they're big players here and have a big voice in terms of our ability to reimagine what a course might look like.
That's true. If you take a look at the plantation course and the nature of the course that we have up there, it's built on the side of a mountain. There really aren't any ponds or ditches or water hazards, for that matter, up there. It's the side of a mountain. And the elements that cause it to play difficult or play easy are primarily the wind, the slope, and the grain of the grass. Those three elements that all kind of grow in the same direction down the mountainside there. And so you can adjust the way a golf course plays simply by the firmness of the ground. For example, a golf course that's a firm golf course is going to play much easier for the average player. I don't know how good a player you are, DW, but
not so great.
Well, but I will tell you this, the more that the ball rolls on the side of a mountain and the farther it goes,
right,
the better you're going to play. I remember first coming to Hawaii, I couldn't believe how far I hit the golf ball here, and I played some of my best golf ever here. And so I think making adjustments to the conditions of the golf course and the elements included in the holes on a course can really help the enjoyment factor.
Yeah. And just also piggybacking on Ben's previous work, when I spoke with Wesley Waialehua at Aloha PGA, he talked about how, you know, we need to look at some of these finer points in terms of like size of maintenance staff, right? How many people are out there maintaining the courses? Sprinkler heads, how effective they are, right? These things all come together to create efficiencies and to make sure water isn't being wasted, being used as most efficiently as it can, and does point to the importance of the work that the people on the courses do, which often gets overlooked.
Well, it does. And I think we need to simplify our maintenance procedures for the most part. If you look at Augusta National, the Masters, the most famous golf course in the world, it's only got really one fairway level of grass and then one second cut level of rough. It doesn't have two or three different step levels of heights of mowed grass. And I think, you know, if we had just short mowed areas and then areas that weren't mowed and weren't part of the real possibility of where you should be playing on that hole, then in the end, it would ultimately be easier.
Yeah. All right. We have another caller on the line. Kaulu, sorry about that. Happy to have you on the air with us. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, I actually was born and raised in Maui, and I guess I just wanted to highlight, the justice issue that's happening really in Maui. You know, I appreciate Mark's comments about the, you know, getting all the stakeholders together to have a conversation, but I think this is not really an issue of people sitting down at the table, because they've been calling for, you know, for a resolution and compromises for decades now, and that hasn't been the case. And so it's really, you're seeing politics playing out on this scale where people who have been oppressed, you know, like as Drew mentioned, the earlier caller, the attorney, he raised the issue of the historic injustices that have been happening in West Maui for over 150 years, where water was taken from them. And so they're still facing these issues, and there hasn't really been a good faith effort on behalf of the governor, I would say, and the Water Commission to show that they are willing to convene this stakeholder meeting to sit down and resolve these issues. And they continue to face injustices. You know, the fact of the matter is that they, a lot of these people who are traditional and customary practices, practitioners, kava farmers, for example, their water is being taken, and it has been taken for decades, over a century, and they've been forced out. And so I don't know if you can understand, I guess, and appreciate their situation and how they haven't been heard for so many years. And that is, you know, you can say that you want the stakeholders to all gather, but that really hasn't been the case. And I think if Kapalua and the golf course was interested in that, they would initiate that process and show some good faith and to, you know, recognize the injustices and help to convene that, and also recognize how their continued practices are impairing and kind of continuing this cycle of oppression for these people in the region. So I just wanted to highlight that and make sure that listeners are getting accurate information, because the governor at this point has continued or refused really to convene any meetings to resolve these issues. And so it really practically it's not happening.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. So, Mark, we just have a minute before we need to break again. Give you a chance to respond to that. But it sounds like she's echoing what you're saying in a way that it's really up to the governor to make this happen.
Well, I think it's up to a lot of people, but certainly the governor is one of the key people. We should not be taking everyone's water away. Certainly, when our agricultural basis changed, when the sugar cane went away, when the pineapple went away, back in my early days of being there, we lost our sort of whole motivation for irrigation, which we shouldn't have. We needed the water just as much as we needed it before when we were growing those crops. But we didn't really do anything about it. And I think the time is now to do something about it. And I'm listening.
Yeah. And I think it's a very valid point that to recognize that so much time has passed and it hasn't happened yet, but perhaps conversations like this can help move it closer to a real conversation and change. We've been hearing from Mark Rolfing about the past, present, and future of golf. It's the first of the month, folks, so we're going to take a break for a test of the emergency alert system. Stay with us.
Support for HPR comes from Ferraro Choi, architects for the Noah Daniel K. Inouye Regional Center, committed to design that serves and celebrates the environment, culture, and community. FerraroChoi.com.
Welcome back to The Conversation. I'm D.W. Gibson. We're discussing the game of golf with Mark Rolfing and all of you. Please feel free to share your thoughts with us, 808-941-3689. Mark, I want to play some thoughts we got from Wesley at the Aloha section of the PGA on how the game might move, how the game might change moving forward to accommodate some of the environmental changes we've been talking about.
Every golf course in the state goes through this process of reviewing playable areas, what should be in play, what shouldn't be able to play, what can be not watered. And in some cases in California, they have brown areas that are specifically there just to be a part of the new aesthetic approach. In our case, some of those situations are with the Big Island courses with the lava that kind of encroach in and are used to just reduce the turf area that needs to be covered by water. And some of the courses on our islands are fortunate enough to have their own sustainable wells to capture so they're not pumping and aren't reliant on other resources. That's a huge benefit. And I don't think in some of the design processes years ago in the 90s and the 80s when some of these courses were built, all of those things were really front concerns. But I think as the islands have grown and demands have changed and weather climate and everything else, it's really played a huge factor on how these courses are operated from an ecological perspective and the superintendents and their knowledge on how to maximize that. But I think the technology and the resources that are available now through the Golf Course Superintendents Association and how we manage turf management has really changed over the years and helped evolve the game.
So I wanted to play that because I think it echoes some of the things we've already said. But again, I think that folds. One of the most exciting things about this discussion to me is this issue feels so intractable. But I think that there is this marriage of ideas here where it comes to like the practical things we need to do, perhaps shrink courses, find ways to use less water, but also discovering ways that that can make the game more exciting, as you've pointed out, right? A faster game played, hearkening back to old tournaments that were some of the most exciting that you saw. There's some marriage of ideas here going on between the practical and the creative.
Right. Wes is absolutely correct, by the way. I go back to Sand Hills in Nebraska, which is now a top 10 golf course in the world. When we originally built that course, built it with 68 acres of maintained turf. 68 acres only. I mean, that is not very much at all.
We were speaking about some courses over 300 acres.
Exactly. I think if everybody set a goal right now, I don't think we need to do a whole lot of studying. I can look at just about every golf course in this state and say, you know what, we don't need to maintain as much turf as we are maintaining here. Just don't have to do it. There are out-of-play areas that we could just let go. Let them go. I think that would be a really good start. But again, it needs to have everybody get together and say, you know what, we're going to take part in this because it's really important. If we don't, we're going to end up with a fight on our hands.
I want to bring another voice into the discussion here. Francine Bapu is the founder of the Bad Liars Collective, which has partnered with Afro Aloha to announce a new amateur golf tournament for the spring of 2026. It's a rather unconventional tournament for amateurs. Here's Francine describing what they hope the tournament will be.
It's not just your typical tournament. Imagine golf meets music festival meets block party. And so, you know, we're really trying to level the playing field for anywhere from beginners to spectators and just getting people more engaged and bringing the community out together. From our experience, you know, I was always invited to go to these tournaments, but never as a player, always as a volunteer or driving the drink cart around. And so, you know, instead of waiting for permission or waiting for something like this to happen, we decided why not create it, you know, and make it fun and inclusive. We weren't waiting for permission to play. We're trying to create our own space here. And we created For the Future this tournament because golf has always been that exclusive space for too long. So historically, it's catered to wealth, age, and a narrow demographic. And the disparities are clear. Women make up only 24% of golfers nationally, and people of color remain significantly underrepresented. But here's what's exciting. The fastest growing players in the sport right now are women and people of color, and also younger golfers looking for connection and not gatekeeping. And our community here in Hawaii can really help drive that shift. And For the Future is our way of creating space. And again, not waiting for permission to create space.
So she spoke about 24% of golfers being female, but might have been exclusively talking about professionals there, because this is a place where you see golf growing. And it'd be good to hear you talk about that growth of women players, but also just ways you see that the game of golf can become more accessible.
Well, first of all, more than half the people that play golf now do not play it on a golf course. They play it on a Topgolf, they play it on a simulator, they play it on a mini putt, they play it on all sorts of different things. That doesn't mean that we can't find new ways to grow the game for certain segments of the population. If you take a look at golf and its importance, the one aspect that I really haven't heard anything about is the whole charitable component of golf. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of charity golf tournaments that happen throughout our islands and way more than that throughout the entire world. These are events that take place all day that raise much, much needed money for charities, and it's really important. So we have to make sure that we continue all the good things that we're doing while we're still trying to find new avenues for opening up areas for different types and styles of golfers. Golf has exploded. I mean, the courses are packed right now. So access and affordability is a difficult situation, and the cost of the game is going up and up and up. More than anything, we need to figure out how to lower the cost. It doesn't need to be what Ben was talking about earlier in the show, you know, $400 necessarily. I mean, there are a few places that can charge that, but not many, that's for sure.
Yeah, you said you've become much more a fan of public courses these days.
Well, I've become a minimalist. I like some of the great non-public courses that are actually minimalist style courses. I love some of the great golf courses where we've reduced the amount of trees, for example. We had the U.S. Open at Oakmont this year. They've had almost 13,000 trees, I think, removed there over the last decade or so. More and more, you know, trees require tremendous amounts of maintenance, tremendous amounts of water, tremendous amounts of manicuring the grass. We just don't need to do all of that. And I think more and more as time goes on, you're going to start seeing the style of these courses slowly change. They're still going to be championship courses. It's going to be different styles of championship golf.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've barely talked about simulators, but I'm glad you brought that up because that's yet another way to reduce natural resources that are required from the game, right? So many people can enjoy the game, practice the game, have access to the game without it requiring big courses or even ranges in some courses can take place in the simulator setting. And your point about benefits to the local nonprofits, I think, is one that deserves underscoring as well. Estimates from Aloha PGA, 400 nonprofits in Hawaii receiving benefits from those tournament play you mentioned, totaling between $1.2 and $1.5 million in donations. So that is a significant part of the puzzle. Any final thoughts? We have just about a minute left, Mark. Any final thoughts that you would bring to our listeners about all that we've been talking about?
I love all the ideas. Again, it's just a matter of listening. It seems like golfers are great talkers, and you're always hearing golfers talk, 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 talk. And I love it when I hear golfers listen. And even the people calling in today, I think we're listening. So I enjoyed the fact that they took the time actually to call in. And I think it's going to take time. It's not something that we can do overnight, but it's something that I think everybody needs to be aware of, and we do have to make some change because what we have going on right now from a golf standpoint is not sustainable.
Yeah. And I echo your gratitude to our callers as well because the issues are longstanding and deep and important and vital to life, right? We're at the end of the day, we are talking about water as a major component of this discussion. But I find comfort and I find excitement in some of the ideas you've championed here today in terms of shrinking courses, introduction of more simulator play, and accepting brown courses around the world. I'd really like to thank you for being us with today, Mark, and adding your perspective. Thank you so very much.
Sorry I didn't win the U.S. Open, by the way.
Well, you know what? Neither did I. So we're even. There you go. We appreciate everyone being with us today. And we're grateful for Mark, especially. If you want to talk about what you hear today, give us your thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going. Send us an email at talkback@HawaiiPublicRadio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, you can check out the Conversation podcast on HawaiiPublicRadio.org or search for it on Apple or Spotify. Tomorrow, we'll be hearing about a family of spies, their secret history behind the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I'm D.W. Gibson, in for Catherine Cruz. Join us for more of the Conversation tomorrow.